Grand Rising, everyone. Ali coming to you live. Spirit and Coffee, Calm the Coffee Year. Pumpkin in season. I got the pumpkin creamer and the pumpkin coffee. Yum-o. Okay, so again, we're reading from the Emerald Tablet, Alchemy for Personal Transformation. And we had some pretty good discussions the other day and talking about your personal myth, who you are, and how to start to work with time. There's the big trick here is that once you know who you are, once you understand that, you start to understand the constructs or the secrets of the universe is what people call it, right? So some people think, oh, you know, only physicists, only chemists, only astrophysicists, only people who are studying neuroscience or, you know, all of these things, quantum physics, only those people have the secrets to the universe. Wrong, not true, not even remotely true. We all have access to that. But we have to get past all of our craziness, right? Which is all of those personalities, archetypes that we hold within us. We have to understand who we are at the macrocosm and the microcosm. And once we bridge the gap between all of those and we start to synergize, we then start to understand how to work with time. Time is a critical thing. Time is something that it is a construct of man, for sure. But we utilized time for several reasons, and we have a bunch of calendars. So that's what we were talking about last time. Now, in the Emerald Tablet, we're talking about Balinese and how he became one, or the Philosopher's Stone, or transformed into the Philosopher's Stone. So he didn't have any possessions, but he left a will. And it contained a summary of the tenets of the Emerald Tablet, which he felt was his true legacy to the world. And the actual circumstances surrounding his death were even more mysterious. His followers insisted that his body rose physically to heaven, and no trace of his corpse was ever found. Okay, so they interpret this to mean that he did transform into the Philosopher's Stone, the ultimate merging of the mind and the matter, one perfect fusion of one mind with the one thing. Okay, so it's kind of interesting. Others, historians said that his disciples stole his body and put him in a secret cave with the Emerald Tablet in his arms. Found clutched by Hermes, which was the same thing that happened with Hermes. Maybe that is where the tablet sits today, waiting for the next initiate to absorb its wondrous message. However, the lore of the Emerald Tablet goes back even further. And it was not first, he wasn't the first to discover the object and pass down the teachings from generation to generation. Hey, Shadow. Hey, Alma. So again, the Emerald Tablet is something that has been passed down from generation to generation to generation. Now, we ourselves as spiritual alchemists, we hold that ability to hold the sacred teachings. And the sacred teachings, again, are not just the sacred teachings. There are certain laws, I would say, that we follow in some way. And that's natural law. That would be God's law. It's not our law. It's not something we created, but mere observation of natural law and how transformation happens. How do we become or transform into the Philosopher's Stone? What does it take for us to get there? Well, we talked about getting past fears, and that's a big one. I can tell you the experience of what it feels like to at least view, and perhaps you've had, some of you guys have had your own, what we call non-ordinary states of existence, or consciousness, non-ordinary states of consciousness. We can also call it a spiritual awakening, epiphany. There's many different words that you can call it. But when we experience something that we have no words for, it's an epiphany, a spiritual epiphany, if you will, if we start to tap into that. Now, the only explanation that I can give, there are no words, is that when you're able to be the witness or the observer or the context unfolding, okay, which I'm going to try to describe this in words, but it gets very difficult. And I think I've tried to do this many different times. But when you become the witness or the observer, the best way to see it, I think from maybe a movie perspective, that's why I like movies, because we can relate to movies. And there's at least a visual attached to it. It's kind of like Neo in the Matrix, where he was able to see the coding. He was able to see the coding, and then he became the context of the coding. Rather than just observing it and looking at it, he actually became it. So that is us, but we're unable to see that right now because of all of the programming that has gotten in the way of us. So again, I think that The Matrix is one of the most amazing movies that was kind of made to describe it. And of course, it was done through technology, the way that we see technology today, through computer codes and all that kind of stuff. That's kind of the best way. Now, when I experienced it, did I see a bunch of codes? No, that's not what happened. But I could see the programming in each individual and how that programming was a part of me and I was a part of it. And as it was connected, I didn't have to do anything. See, I was the context unfolding through them, through the individuals that were showing up. So really hard to describe, but also very scary place for the ego. The re-entry from a death and rebirth, sometimes the re-entry is probably more hard than actually the experience itself. People have near-death experiences. People have all of these things. And when they do, re-entry is harder. So people are fearing getting to the divine or tapping into the divine or their own power. But here's the deal. What's really afraid is not you or your soul, because that's, you're perfectly perfect, right? You're an extension of that. It's the ego that's afraid. The ego has this fear. See, and the fear is this rebirth of like, I might die, because really the only thing that dies is our ego, right? Yes, our flesh dies. This flesh body dies, but we are still connected to the one thing. And when we understand this, right, we can allow ourselves to go through the fear. It's working with the ego. Now, we're not telling the ego it's wrong. We're not trying to get rid of ego. Ego helps us survive in the material world. And we're here to enjoy this life. We're here to observe it and witness it and be a part of it. Now, humans, being as crazy as we are, we distort it. We do all kinds of weird shit. We've done some pretty weird shit. You got to admit, we're in a weird time. We've created some pretty weird storylines here. Ego has to be humble and give love. Yeah. And so, and to tap into that, now it's hard because the ego fights for survival. That's what keeps us alive. Everybody's like, I don't have an ego. Well, then you'd be dead. What do you mean? The ego is what wants to stay alive. It's afraid of death. That's where the fear of death comes from, is the ego's fight to hold on. It wants to hold on to, what does it want to hold on to? It wants to hold on to your particular personality and your fingerprint, your archetypal fingerprint, we'll call it. Okay. Which is the personalities that exist within you. And I tell you a story, because I was thinking this morning about, I did a hypnotherapy session with a friend of mine. And in that hypnotherapy session, we talk about our higher self, right? She taps you into your higher self. Most people think their higher self is their God self. Well, that's not necessarily the case. I started thinking my higher self is nothing like my soul. It's still part of the ego. Our higher self, remember, when we think of ourself as a self, that is ego. When I talk to my higher self, or when I tap into my higher self, really what it is, it's the archetypal pattern that's most dominant within me. Literally, the most dominant archetype. It's when I go to the soul part of myself that I start to reach into source. But not the higher self. You see, here's the distinction. And this is, again, they don't tell you guys this. This is not information readily available. And it takes years to practice and to find the key that's going to help you to transcend. Okay, it's a key, right? Each individual has their own process to get there. Each individual may experience it differently, and each individual has their own relationship with divine source, which that's theirs and theirs alone. The key to get there, that the higher self that people think they're tapping into is still a limitation of who you are, because the higher self is still operates within the microcosm. Now, it can be pulled from the macrocosm, but it's not fully the macrocosm. Okay, so understanding this, because they would say, your higher self is your true divine connection to God. But you've got to ask yourself, no, is it the construct of an archetype? And what does it want? And is it trying to hold on to me to what? What does it want me to do? What is it asking? What's its intention? See, soul doesn't have an agenda. Soul is just fluid. If you saw God or source as like a stream, there's no agenda. It just happens. It unfolds. Okay. And if you go into Asia, right, that's their worldview is about the unfolding. It's not created. It's just there. And it sort of unfolds kind of like the lotus flower or like any flower, right? You have this spark that's in the seed, and it holds the life force for that potentiality, which I talked about before, for that seed to grow into its magnificence. That seed is so tiny, but the potential for what it can be is already there. And now it just needs to unfold. So that's what we are. We're just unfolding into our fullest potential, and we're sprouting. And then we're reaching beyond our own understanding. So your higher self is still a construct of ego. It has an agenda. We had to ask it, what is your agenda? What is your intention? What do you want? You could talk to your higher self. I literally, my higher self is not my God-like self. It's not my soul. It's a construct of the archetypal, and that's what Jung was calling archetypes, the archetypal patterning that exists within the pool of this three-dimensional time space, the hero's journey, if you will. You guys heard of the hero's journey. What is the hero's journey? Well, the hero's journey is sort of this script that gets played out over and over again. We are in a hero's journey always. Why? How? How did it happen? Look at all the myth stories. Look at all the ancient tradition oral stories that have been passed down. They're all hero stories. All of them. They all have certain patterning. And each character that shows up has some sort of same qualities. Look in your life at the different people that show up in your life. You're part of that hero story. You have your own hero story. And as you go through it, you start to see the characters that show up in your life. And you're like, wow. I saw the trickster in this story, right? I saw the one who maybe the wise old person who shows up, the carrier of wisdom, the one that's the way shower for you, the guidance. You have the big, the person who's maybe your nemesis or the person that's trying to take you down, right? Now, they magnify this hero story, but we ourselves are in our own hero story. Then this is just a pattern that was recognized. And now we even create, why are we so in love with the hero story? We go to the movies and all of those comic books and everything is just the retelling of a hero story over and over and over and over and over again. And guess what? People love it. They eat it up. Why? Because they know inherently they are that. It's part of them. It's part of our journey here on Earth. So we get to choose. We get to choose our hero's journey. Are we going to, walk through our life just acting is that it doesn't exist, and then not we get to choose, right? Every hero kind of takes a turn. I always think of Percy Jackson. That's a movie that I watch, and I like it for several reasons, but there's a specific scene that I absolutely love that I talk about when they're in the casino. And they say, don't eat from the casino because you'll get stuck there. And time will go away and you're not going to be on your path to transcendence. Well, they start to eat the cakes and they're so good, right? It's kind of like when you think about our life. We do things that feel good, that keep us locked in time when we could be utilizing our time wisely, but it feels so good. It tastes so good, but something about it is not right. That's sometimes we go to drugs and alcohol and all these things, right? So it's trying to explain to us that, yes, we too get caught up in certain things that keep us from actually transcending or becoming the one mind and the one thing, becoming the philosopher's stone. You are the philosopher's stone. Looking for the Holy Grail, you are the Holy Grail. Looking to church, you are the church. Literally, the key lives in you. People are on a quest looking for keys outside of themselves. You are the key. I mean, we were born with the key inside of us. We are the life force. I mean, that's some powerful shit when you start to think about it. And I think it scares the living daylights out of some people. It is scary because when we think about the potential that we have within us, the power that exists within us, that can seem very like huge, almost too big for us to even comprehend. But you have it in you. And you can radiate out. And sometimes your power and your light is too much for others because they're afraid that they don't have it, but they do. They've just forgotten. See? And as we spread out and our light spreads out and some people start to try to find the darkness, right? They want to get away from you because your light is radiating out. Now, here's the trick. As we start to become light and light and light and more light, there's no more room for ego. But the ego is a tricky thing, right? It's a trickster. The ego is the trickster in your hero story. And let me tell you what, it will fight and it will find and it'll trick. Before you know it, it's crept right back in because it's afraid. It's afraid that you're going to drown it out with light. So we have to be aware. That's why people say be present, be aware, be self-aware, question everything, because we're not just questioning the world around us. I don't just go question, oh, well, is this right or is this wrong? Do I believe in this? I question myself. How am I engaging in this? What am I allowing myself to believe? Why do I believe that? Who's believing that? Am I dealing with an archetype within me that's trying to maneuver through this? And what archetype is showing up? What personality is showing up to maneuver through this shadow side, through the darkness? Is it trying to pull me down deeper into the dark, or is it trying to help me through this process? Talk to your personalities. I talked about that the other day. Talk to them. What is your intention? What do you want from me? Where's my counter personality? How do I magnify that? The one that's going to help me get through it. The one that's going to be the way shower. And then as you ask for that support, right, then when it shows up, you'll start to see it show up on the external world. Because remember, as I started this, as within, so without, you are the context. You are the life force. You are the key. You are the power. You are the key that opens many doors. But we're looking for the keys outside of us to open the doors within us. See, it's the opposite. The key is within you so that you can open the doors without. So as we do that, as we look inside, and as we figure out who we are, and we start to navigate our internal world, we start to open up the secrets of the cosmos, and everybody can access this. It's not just for one, it's not just for a few, it's for everyone. If you start hearing people that say, only I have the answers, I know what's going on, I, me, that's all ego. That's all ego. They have their answers, they have their way, and maybe they know, but are they teaching others how to do that? I don't know. I'm not sure. And I'll tell you why, because I know myself. You have to know who you are, right? Who are you? And when you understand that and you know that, you navigate through that, you start to listen and you hear people, and then you can tell, who are they working for? You can even ask. If you're following someone and you're curious, are you a light worker? Are you working for the shadow? What is it? They'll tell you. They'll tell you. Literally, they'll tell you. Yes, I'm a light worker. No, I'm not a light worker. I'm working for the darkness. Now, is either right, wrong, good, or bad? No. They all have a function. They all have a purpose. But we get to choose. See, we get choice. You got to choose your path. Now, consequences happen either way. So I've talked about that before. So remember, the key lives within you. You have a certain soul map. You have a certain archetypal patterning. And when you understand that within yourself, you can open up and start to understand how to utilize these deeper sacred teachings that are available to everybody, like time, space. We start to understand transcendence, where we feel like we're going to disappear. And on re-entry, and so people talk about the Akashic Records, people talk about all that. You have access to it too. People, well, how do I get there? They think meditation is just going to get them there. It's not. No, just meditation alone is not going to get people there. They can meditate forever. Am I saying that it can't ever? No, that's not what I'm saying. In order to tap into the sacred teachings, you have to remember who you are. Who are you? Not who are you in a superficial way. Not who are you in just the microcosm way. Well, I'm Natalie, and I'm this, and I'm a sister, and I'm, okay, great. Now let's get a little deeper. What's your personal myth? What stellar evolution are you in? See, in the ancient times, they did initiation, and initiation allowed individuals to be named something different. They received new names every time they were initiated. Now, they've sort of, and I want to say they've watered down initiation through certain religious practices. I'm not going to say who or what, but what I will say is that they do initiation, and they do say, we're going to give you a new name. Notice that when people do baptism and all these things, they're people who are baptizing them or confirming them or whatever it is, they give them a name. Okay, when back in the day when natives were doing this, right, or these tribes would do initiation with the children, they received a new name after they did certain things, after they were initiated into different things. When we talk about Masons, when we talk about this, they do the same thing. The initiates, once they go through something, they receive a name. Here's the deal. I used to never understand. This was the biggest thing for me, is initiation. I thought I had to be initiated by something or someone or whatever. And I could never really understand what it was. But, you know, I'd go to these groups and I'd be like, I don't believe in what they're saying. I can't follow this. And if I asked questions, then I couldn't ask questions. So I'm like, then this is not for me. I did all of this work through my own understanding, through my own connection to divine, through my own search. as I did my own initiations, which you have the power to do on your own too. Now, you could do initiation through organization, and that's totally up to you. That's fine. There's nothing right, wrong, or good about it. Everybody has their own unique way back to source. But the initiation, every initiation I went through, I received a name. So as you go through your initiation, it's like a death and a rebirth. They talk about it in all the religions, right? Death and rebirth. You're reborn again. Well, what does that really mean? You're like, yes, I'm reborn again. It means that you're starting to connect into who you are internally. You understand who you are, not just at the basic level of, I'm Natalie. Okay, and what does that even mean? What is your personal mythology? Right? What stellar evolution are you in? Ask yourself those questions. Go on that journey. Finding answers within yourself and see where it takes you. What is my truth? What are my pillars? How do I hold a torch for the pillars in my world? What are my values? What are my morals? What are my principles? What are my practices? When we start to pull all of that together, right? We start to construct and work with. When we connect the macrocosm with the microcosm, we become the author, the authority of our own life. Nobody can author it for us. Nobody can be an authority for us, and we're not afraid. See, that's what ends up happening. When you start to do this work deeply, you're not afraid. You think there was so many individuals who knew it, you know, who they are, and they went through pure hell, but they weren't afraid because they knew who they were. They weren't going to budge. They understood who they are. When you find that out, no one can take it away from you. So through initiation and remembering and working, remember, you are key. You are the key. You are source. The key doesn't exist without you. It's within you. You hold all the answers for you. But we're searching, and the reason why we feel like there's a void or something's missing is because we're continually searching outside of ourselves, not inside ourselves. Start filling your cup internally, and you will not have thirst. You won't be thirsty. You won't need to get validation. Your cup will be filled. You'll satiate the thirst within you. But if you keep looking externally, you're always going to feel like something's missing. You are key. You hold the key. It's kind of scary when you think about it for ego. When the ego shows up, it's scary because that means that we hold the power. And yes, it's responsibility. It means that we have to live up to, right, in this physical body. Because we numb ourselves out from really being as powerful as we can possibly be. Get off all the alcohol. Get off all the drugs. Get off everything. Don't do anything. See with clear eyes. Don't even take psychedelics. See what happens. And then try transcending without anything. Being just clear. And sometimes that's scary. Because now what? We can't numb it out. Most people are numbing it out with alcohol, drugs, partying, whatever they do to avoid it. Because it is a big responsibility. It means that we dedicate every single day of every single minute of every single part of our life to it. And some people are not willing to let go of the comforts because it's not comfortable. It's never, it's like Kung Fu, okay? I take Kung Fu. And as you move up in belt rank in Kung Fu, it doesn't get easier, it gets harder. And forms get longer. And your ability gets, so it's constantly an elevating thing. It's never, oh, now it's easier. Oh, now it's, no. It's challenging and challenging and challenging. And so this path is a challenge. And the reason most people don't get to their full potential is because they stop. They get to a point and then they just stop. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But you're not fully blossoming into your full potential. And I dare to ask how many people feel like they're living to their full potential? Not even the greatest, quote unquote, greatest people that we talk about in history felt like they were at their full potential. They even felt like they weren't at full capacity. Because we elevate, things get more intricate. It gets harder and harder and harder and harder and harder. And I don't even want to say harder. Let's just say that the challenges become a little bit more, and that's a good thing, not a bad thing, as in challenges that are going to kill us. They're challenges that help us grow. They help us to create. We start to think bigger. We start to say, wow, I can hold this. Can I do this? Can I do that? And before you know it, you're growing bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. Light's radiating outward, 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 outward. I mean, just look at Leonardo da Vinci. He's one of the people that I sort of like was, I wished I could have had a conversation with him. I think I do in my own mind, but the dude was still didn't feel like he accomplished everything he wanted to. The Mona Lisa wasn't even finished, believe it or not. He wasn't done. He wasn't finished. He had projects that he left unfinished all over the place. I mean, it's pretty crazy, right? So we think we're just afraid. Are we living to our full potential? Do we have the potential to be like that? We do. We have the potential to be Leonardo da Vinci and all those other people. Yes, you do. But will you take the journey? They were willing to. You'll have your unique way that you leave your legacy here. But you've got to continue the journey, right? And I know Radio Projects, you have the one thing I remember because I was able to get on, which was the game theory. And they were, I think, from what I understood, the guy said, you know, people who sort of pick apart the game tend to lose the game because they're not actually playing the game. They're they're too busy looking at how the game was built. I tend to think that we could be both and it could be both powerful, equally powerful, right? That yes, we are here and we are playing the hero's journey. That's the game that we've said we were gonna play, and that's what we're here playing on Earth, the hero's journey. And we get played over and over again. But again, there's specific archetypal patterns that show up. If you know how to utilize them, right, then you become the key. You could see it as a video game, pretty much, even. I mean, that's how we've constructed life. That's how we've constructed, I would say, human programming, if you will. Those mythologies and those archetypal patterns exist in us. Personality, the way the ego is constructed. So if we understand our own personal ego construct, which is like the container for our personality or archetype or whatever you want to call it, and if we understand that little microcosm and we learn how to use it and work with it, then we could start to understand the macrocosm, which is a bigger piece to the puzzle. All exist within you. You are the key. So in a way, those movies, and that's why I love watching movies, they give us clues and hints. They know. These people, if you looked at the Masons and all this, they understand alchemy. They know this is what they keep from people. This is what everybody's like, it's a conspiracy theory. What are they keeping? What they're keeping is this wisdom. That's why this is called practical use of esoteric wisdom. It's hidden information, and they've dispersed it into little pieces all over the place. But everybody has access to it. See? But they're going to misdirect you. They're going to give you this, and then these people stay stuck in, I don't want to call it conspiracy theories, but as people stay stuck in certain storylines, they're not getting that that storyline is a trap to keep them from actually doing the work, to keep them from focusing on themselves. Let me focus on the external. What are they doing? Maybe I'll figure it out. Start looking at yourself. You'll figure it out. It's all in you. It's not outside of you. I don't know how many more other ways to say it. It's that you have the key. And you have to understand who you are. And that takes time, and that takes shutting off all of the other stuff. You have to shut it off and start listening to yourself. I put that the other day. If you can listen to everybody else, if you can listen to TV and all these people, you can listen to yourself. You can give yourself 10 minutes a day just to listen to you, just to be with you. Ask yourself, when I'm with myself, what is the programming that I'm listening to internally to myself? What frequency am I tapped into for myself? What is the dialogue internally for myself? When I turn off all of the programming and what other people are telling me, what am I telling myself? That's deep, because some people, they numb it out. They don't want to listen to themselves. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear what their self has to say to their self. People don't want to hear it, because a lot of it is, I'm not worthy. I'm not enough. I'm not this. I'm not that. I'm not that. Guess what? That's all bullshit, right? What that is in your head is your ego's fear to expand, because it doesn't want you to know that you are powerful, because it's afraid of death. It's afraid it'll die. It's afraid that you'll kill it. That's all. And sometimes we have to go through death and rebirth. That's what death and rebirth on this earth is. It's killing our ego to expand the ego so it can hold more. Work with the ego. And eventually you get to a point where the ego and your soul sort of join as one. And the ego recognizes that it's not a threat. It's not it's not being threatened. Okay. So there you go. This is kind of preachy. But the next chapter in this, the Emerald Tablet, is our divine legacy. And so we'll be doing that, and it's Alexander's treasure. And we'll just go into that, which is going to be awesome. And what it talks about is the first Hermes, which is Thoth, and how Thoth helped us with wisdom. Akhenaten and the second Hermes, and it talks about that, and the one God, the one mind. And then we get into Balinus, which is the third Hermes, and then the history of the tablet. So if you ever wanted to read the book, again, it is the Emerald Tablet, Alchemy for Personal Transformation. Again, it's going to take me forever to get through it, because I talk a lot about, you know, trying to express and describe. You can get a lot of understanding from the actual pictures that the alchemists did back in the day, because they, the active imagination, or the way that we are able to describe what alchemy is, doesn't necessarily have words at times. Sometimes it's pictures, sometimes it's mandalas, and that's how we do it. Sometimes it's models, it's sacred geometry. And so we get to sort of describe what it is we're experiencing as spiritual alchemists. So you have the opportunity to tap into your power, figure out what your soul map is, your stellar map is, and you will have your own way of describing your alchemy. and it could be helpful for somebody on their journey. And that's what I do. I use my personal alchemy to support people to find their own. Okay, that's why I'm here. You are powerful. You are enough. You matter. You are worthy. You're worthy enough to listen to your own dialogue within your own head to see what shows up. Okay, so hopefully that's helpful. I also am doing a, I don't want to call it time management, but if you go to my Spirit and Coffee Talk one at on Facebook, there's an event I'm going to be having October 11th, pretty limited, but you can join, and it's going to be a live session on time. So pretty much the alchemy of time. It's very pointed. I'm not all over the place, actually. Stay on topic. it's definitely not like the podcast, but it is teachings. So there you go. It teach you a little bit about what time is and what time is not, and how we're stuck in the loop of time. Pretty cool stuff, right? Okay. So there you have it. Love you guys. Have a marvelous, magnetic, magnificent, miraculous, mystical Monday. And I will see you guys. No, I won't see you tomorrow because I'm going to get an iron infusion, but I will be seeing you guys on Wednesday. Okay. Have a great day.